Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a good week so far. Before we get into the podcast, I would love to tell you to all go join my Discord community. We talk about the podcast on there. I give away a bunch of free records. I give away merch, tickets, sometimes flights to my shows. So before, if any of you aren't in there that's listening, please hit the link in the description and you'll be able to get involved on that community as well. However, before you do that, listen to this podcast because it's a good one. Frankie Waugh. I became aware of Frankie's music during the pandemic. I put out my record, You Take Me Higher, and at the same time, roughly around the same time, he put out Come Together, I believe. And the record did amazing things, and I was like really interested to see what he would do from there. And he's grown this amazing community. He's grown an extremely successful touring career, started his label Shen, has a residency in Ibiza. It's kind of like the quintessential career of what most people want in when they start to become a DJ and a producer in electronic music industry. And he's smashed everything out of the park. And it's so nice to see. There's obviously a lot of hard work that goes behind that. And I wanted to talk to him about that and kind of talk to him about how it all started and the branding and everything like that. So I'm going to stop blabbering on and let you guys listen to the conversation. It's a really good one, this one. I really enjoyed it. So without further ado, Frankie Waugh. Frankie Waugh, what's cooking, man? How are you?
Yeah, what's good, bro? Good to finally hook up.
Mate, we've been trying to do this for so long.
I know, man.
I apologize for the absolute fuck ups on the last twice. Is it two times?
Let's blame management, shall we?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And if they're listening, it's all your fault.
Yeah.
How's things,
sorry,
mate?
Phil. Yeah, really good, mate. Really good. I've just about recovered from, it's Tuesday now, isn't it? Yeah, I'm in Ibiza. The residency is on obviously on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's a heavy one, man. It's a big day. Like, it starts at about 4 p.m. for me. We do the artist meal at like 5.
Yeah.
Stay there for a few hours. Then we drive to the opposite side of the island, to Sanam, to do the pre-party at Savannah's.
Yeah.
And then I go back to the other side of the island to open the club at 12. And because, you know, with it being my own event, I want to see every DJ play. So I want to see the warm-up set right to the end. And, you know, I want to see everyone in the club, all the guests that come in, and yeah, do it all, man. So it's a big day. Like, I'm there on the front door, wristbanding people, greeting them, bringing them in.
That's amazing.
Sitting them down. Yeah, man. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, 5 minutes, you're on stage. And yeah, but it's crazy. And do you know what, Will? I'm absolutely loving it.
It's really important that, and I think this is the thing that in this industry that it can get lost, right? And the whole, like, we have the best jobs in the world, right? We're super super lucky. But it's also, it's the job. It's still hard work and it's still a lot of work. And I think that's a classic example is, like, you're doing 14, 15 hour days, realistically, yeah, if you're starting at four. But yeah, it doesn't start at four. It starts when you wake up, because it's mentally, it's in your head when you wake up.
Of course it is, man. But we knew what we signed up for.
Totally.
And the shows and the energy that you get back from the fans and the crowd make it all worth it. And yeah, I make a point of, you know, I never want to bring the moaning about the travel and that to the fans, really. And I understand why some people do, but that's not my thing, really, because it's just like, we knew what we signed up for, and it's all worth it in the end, man. Like,
well, I think it's also,
if you feel like that, don't take so much on. Stop taking so much on, because you need to be there 100% for every performance, man. It's not their fault if you're turning up because you decide to take three shows that week. They need 100%. They bought a ticket. You need to give them it. Do you know what I mean?
No, I totally agree with you, and I'm all on that kind of wavelength, because I remember when I first started touring, like, full time, maybe 10 years ago, and some of the guys that I was touring with were a bit older, and they were like, you're gonna start hating travel, you're gonna, like, it's gonna be awful, blah 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 blah. And for me, it was just like, how do you change that mindset where you don't hate the travel, and you don't, and you can look at it as, this is the job, part of the job. And yes, it's not always enjoyable, the travel, but, like, going to the airport is just kind of, it's so normal to us, right? And you have to normalize it.
Yeah,
it's just like,
of course you do.
It's just like anybody going to the office every single day. It's like, you have to normalize it, otherwise you're going to hate your life.
You are, man, and that's it. You've got to flip the mindset and change the glass from half empty to half full.
Yeah,
because I remember the days when I was slogging it out in the studio. Couldn't get a gig to save my life. I would have killed to be in an airport 2-3 times a week. Do you know what I mean? So just all you've got to do is just remind yourself of that moment, and you find a perspective instantly.
Yeah.
We're lucky to be able to go to these places. And that's what I constantly remind myself, as cliche as it may sound, like, just constantly remind myself that, although, you know, them weird noises you're making in your studio by yourself have brought you to these places all around the world. It's crazy, really.
It's pretty amazing.
You never get used to it, do you? I mean, how long have you been touring, Will?
Full time, 10 years, but I was touring when I was, my first residency in Ibiza was when I was 18.
Wow. So you're a vet, man.
So I've been doing it for a while, yeah.
But you're a veteran, man.
Yeah, I know. I feel like it as well. Old man right now. But no, I think this is the thing. It's like, I really want to kind of stay on this topic, because it's super interesting. It's really nice to hear you say you enjoy it. And genuinely, it feels like you enjoy it. Because I think it's really, I'll be honest with me, for me, like, the last, like, few months, like, it, or not few months, but it's tough to always enjoy. It's tough to really enjoy. And I think
it's a roller coaster. That's the thing. Like, you know, and even, like, you can go to, like, even when you think, this is what I love about this journey, right? And if you remove your ego from this, there's never a dull moment, because it's like, you can play a show to 10,000 people one day and you fly in, then the next day you've flown into another area of the world, and there's maybe a few hundred people there, and you're a new DJ again. You've got to earn the trust and build them again. But I can honestly say, for me, like, that's the best part of it. It keeps your feet on the ground and it keeps you, like, fresh, man. Like, you've got to earn that trust. And I love that building process as a DJ of, like, having the ups and downs. It keeps you there, it keeps you level. And
yeah, I always wonder what it's like for Tiësto.
Yeah.
Where it's like every show is just, like, mental. Like, slams.
I mean, Yeah, like massive headline show, big, massive anthems every now time. And on start.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a different world, isn't it? I know we all sort of are under this big umbrella of house and dance music, but really, when you start looking at the sectors, they're miles apart, really.
Yeah, massive. Yeah, even like when we're doing our biggest shows of our lives, let's say, for instance, we're at Glastonbury or we're at an EDC or at Tomorrowland. That's every weekend for those people.
Of course. It's a different mindset, a different sort of perspective altogether, isn't it, I think. But
yeah.
I've always said sort of like, no matter how big this can potentially get, like I want to keep involved in the grassroots of what built this for me. So always still focus on a handful of small cap venues a year where the diehard hardcore fans can see you for a reasonable ticket price in an intimate venue and connect with you like that. I don't know if you remember it, but I did the All Night Long tour in the UK. Definitely one of the best things I've ever done in my career.
Yeah.
And I think that I look at how I was as a DJ at the beginning of that tour to where I was at the end. I just learned so much, everything from how I build a room, build a set, even knowing that you should never book three All Night Long shows in a row ever again. Fucking hell, man. I did Scotland on the Thursday, Newcastle on the Friday, Liverpool on the Saturday. It worked out at like, I think, 24 hours of music across 3 days.
Yeah.
By the third set, man, I was fucking dizzy.
Do you drink?
You are, mate?
Do you drink?
Not really. Yeah. I mean, I do, but I wouldn't say I'm a big drinker. But when I'm behind the booth, I'll have a few shots with the promoters and people and that. But no, I wouldn't say I'm a big drinker. But I'll never book three all night long shows continuously one after the other again. But it was a great experience, and I'm looking to build another one sort of first quarter next year just to get back into that.
It's fun, and man.
Hopefully, take it worldwide. You know, do it on a world scale, because that's where the real grassroots, like hardcore fans, get to go on that proper journey with you. And they're there; they can sweat on you almost. And you're not a dot in the distance in this 50,000 cap festival. And that's for me, you know, as much as what it's about as playing those big production shows as well.
I think it's also how you build true fans in those nights. It's great. Like at a festival, you and I have all had these memories as fans where you go see somebody play, you go see an artist perform, and it's like, wow, you're hearing all the classics, you're hearing everything you want to hear.
Yeah.
But an all night long in like a 200 to 500 cap venue is just an experience for people that they don't often get to experience nowadays, especially nowadays with the virality of how the industry is and everything like that.
Definitely, mate.
It's really interesting how that all night long will be somebody's memory for the rest of their life.
For sure, man. And I think that, you know, it's the different experiences all over, isn't there? Like for us, we love, you'd be lying if you said you didn't love going and banging it out for an hour at a festival.
Totally.
But I know full well that I wouldn't want that to be my career.
No.
Because, you know, this, going back to this Ibiza residency that I'm doing, Will, like I'm playing records that I would never get the chance to play on that sort of scale on the tour.
Yeah.
And as a DJ and a selector, like, that's what we live for, really, isn't it? Like, them mind-bending records, them obscure ones, the ones that just never see the light of day, but they do at 5, 6 a.m. in the morning in the club when you've got them in the palm of your hand. Like,
It's really interesting, because I've had this conversation a few times, and it's kind of about the whole DJ. What is a DJ now and all of that? And what's our role as a DJ? Because I think our roles have changed massively in the times where, like, you were just the DJ, and like people would pay to come and see you, but they knew you were a DJ. Whereas now it's like people know your music left, right, and center. Like they're coming to see you play your music. They're not
definitely
not necessarily coming to see you be a DJ.
And no, I mean, I was thinking this earlier. I was literally only having a conversation with one of my friends earlier, Will. Like, you've got to have a sound now.
Yeah.
And people have got to know you for that. Like, years ago, it was like, who had the records?
Yeah.
But really, if you're not producing your own records, like, I make a big thing of saying, look, come see me play, because you are going to hear records that you're never going to hear again or hear anywhere else. Because it, for me, that's probably the only way of having that point of difference. Yeah. Because with things like Shazam at your fingertips, like years ago, I mean, my manager used to manage Sasha, and he was saying, like, they used to call them train spotters at the front.
Yeah.
They would be there trying to get Sasha's records at the front. So in the end, some of his shows, he'd have a curtain up.
Yeah.
So they couldn't get his records. But now you can stand and Shazam it. You could clone someone's set very easily, really.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your point of difference? And I think it's making sure that you're producing music, you've got your own sound, and then that's another way of the audience to be able to connect with you, because music is the best way to do that, isn't it?
100%. 100%. And I think it's also a way for you as an artist to kind of stand out from the rest. Like, you're not playing, yeah. I've never seen you play, but I can guarantee you're probably not playing what a lot of other DJs are playing.
Absolutely not, mate.
And I think it's really important that for longevity as an artist as well. And longevity, not as a producer or, but as a DJ, is like, people will come to see you for a unique show rather than go and see somebody
definitely
else that's just going to play the same shit, really.
Absolutely, mate. And I think, like, it's a learning curve that we all go through, because, you know, I don't know what you was like in the early days. Like, was you a DJ before you was a producer and
yeah,
then started producing? Or...
Very closely, right. Yeah. I was DJ and then producer pretty quickly.
Yeah, after. I was the other way around. I was a producer before I was a DJ.
Oh, really?
And I remember, like, my first gig, I was scared to death of playing my own record.
Yeah,
like, in my head, I was like, I'm going to put my record on. They're going to know it's mine, and the dance floor is going to clear.
Yeah.
So it took a long time to build that confidence up. It was more then you would be looking at the people that you sort of aspire to be and look up at, and you would play the records that they play and build your set around it until you finally build the confidence to tell your own story.
Yeah.
And I can only encourage other artists to do it, because for me, that is when things truly just started to click into place. Well, like, it was when you could see people were clicking with this, because it was me being me, not, you know, just being as authentic as I could possibly be.
Totally.
But it takes a long time to get that confidence, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it also takes a long time
to get... Even playing your record to people, like my mates, when I was making it, I was like, let's have a listen then. I'll be like, fuck off. Not showing you. You know what I mean? Playing 30 seconds and like, yeah, skip it to the drop.
Skip it
that's it. That's all you're hearing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I still do that. I still do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I still won't play that, sit and play the whole record to somebody. It's weird. It's really weird that we play it in a club, but like I think it's just like, maybe it's an ego thing. It's like, I just don't want the rejection.
I think either that, for me, I've just always been my own worst critic.
Yeah.
So, but I think I read, I was listening to a Pete Tong interview one time, and something with what he said that day really struck with me as what we go through as the production process. And it's like, once you've learned how to write chords, bass lines, melodies, and you've learned your door and the techniques and things, ultimately then all it comes down to is a process of elimination.
Yeah.
Of like, what melody to pick. You might have two melodies down, then it's like, which one? And it's trusting your taste in music. Do you think, then you've got to revert back to like, do I think I have good taste in music? Am I a good selector?
Yeah.
Right. Do I think this sounds good? Yeah, it does. Right. Fucking trust your instinct then and lay it down. Do you know what I mean?
It's doing your job at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And it's trusting that you know how to do your job. But going back to that DJ thing, do you think we're actually DJs?
Do you think what? Sorry.
Do you think we're actually DJs from what we do nowadays? Like, I'm more so talking of like, not doing the all night long, because yes, that is a DJ thing. But when you're doing the Frankie Wah show, is like, is that a DJ show? I question myself. am I doing, I'm playing just Will Clark
what?
Music.
Because of the technology we've got at our fingertips now, we're not playing on vinyl or
yeah,
what?
And just like the fact that the quintessential DJ to me, and it might be different to you, but like the quintessential DJ to me was like, you're a selector of playing other people's records. And you are that, and now it's more so.
Yeah, good point.
Now it's
good
more point. So like, for me, and I can only talk for myself, but like 99% or 95% of my sets is my records.
Yeah, same here, man. So what you're saying, it's more an artist proposition than it is a DJ.
Yeah, it sounds fucking weird and bougie as fuck saying you're the artist, but it's, yeah, I'm just like, I really struggle with it at this moment in time. Not struggle with it, but I question it a lot. Where it's like, oh, this is it's a weird flip how it's all gone now, because it never used to be like this. Never used to be
No, not at all. Like, you go back to the early years of Carl Cox and all that, and how they sort of started, built this whole thing. It was like the massive collection of records and being across what was coming out and stuff. Like, I'm openly like the other way of it.
Same.
And the main reason for why, Will, is because I think in order to have your own sound, it's better that it's not influenced by anything you're hearing.
Yeah.
Then you can really go in and just put your stamp on what you're making. And then it's like, you're not going to sound like anyone else. That's for me the main thing. Like, some of my mates are like, oh, what's your favorite mix? I'm like, I don't know, because I don't really listen to other DJs' mixes. And that's not like, there's so many DJs out there that are like literally in awe of and respect. But at the same time, it's like, when we're on the road, when do you have time to really listen to someone's 2-hour mix? Yeah. You don't really.
Yeah. No, I'm exactly the same. And I kind of feel very similar. I'd like to get your perspective on it, on other people's music. And I have like a handful of people that I kind of would check out occasionally, but I don't really pay much. And it's probably not the best way, but I don't really pay attention to anything.
No, I'm exactly the same. So I've got a handful of mates, you know, that we send music direct to one another. Bar that, I mean, but what is happening now, though, to be fair, Will, with me launching Shen and people signing, it's given me this new sort of found passion of wanting to find that next artist and shine the spotlight on them. Yeah. So I'm trying to be across as much up-and-coming artists and emerging talent as I can be. And hearing stuff like that and developing it, A&R in it, like I'm really hands-on with the brand and how a record needs to sound if I'm signing it.
Yeah.
So certain records that you've heard come out on the label may have been A&R'd like 3 or 4 times, but I think that's crucial in order to build the brand that you want and a sort of distinctive sound. But it is exciting finding these new artists that you know, you think, right, I can give them some of my fan base. Yeah. They're going to like what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? And that's exciting, but I can't believe it, really. I'm exactly the same, man. I'm like, I don't really know what's going on musically. Like, all right, who's number one on Beatport? I don't know.
It's interesting.
Keep you fresh.
Yeah, but I think it's also, it's like, I think it's really important what you're saying about the A&R in for Shen and kind of when you're signing artists. It's similar to me with my label, but like, I think by doing that, you're also allowing new producers to learn the process of an A&R in like a healthy way. But also, I think it's how you create your brand, and it's something branding's from. I've obviously never really spoke to you in person, and we've never met in person, but like, I think from an outsider's point of view, you kind of pay attention to some people just because you kind of almost have to, right? And you're one of those artists where I kind of heard of you through the pandemic, and we had releases kind of come out at the same time and be successful at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's just like people that you just kind of see. And the one thing that I've always kind of noticed with you is that there's always like a through line branding wise. And it's very consistent. Like you know what you're going to get when it comes to Frankie.
Thank you.
And I think it's like, I really want to kind of get into that and go through the concepts of like, why you do that and how you do that and kind of how you go from the like the concept to actually the execution of it.
Yeah.
Of the brand. And because Frank, you are, I don't know the history of that, but it's been for the last 4 years, 3 years for me, I think I've been aware of it. It's gone from the record. Was it Come Together?
Yeah, Come Together was sort of like well, Get Me High was the first sort of really thing that put me on people's radar. And then the next one that sort of elevated was that, and then sort of moved into that melodic world, and things just really started coming into fruition, if you like. And
so I guess I want to kind of get into the whole branding side of things with you, and how that whole process started, and how you execute things, because it's very consistent, which is important.
I think to simply start with that, because it's such a big sort of subject. I think you start with, for me, everything's got to have a meaning. So it's like Frankie Wah wasn't a name that was plucked up out of the sky. Like it's my middle name, named after both my granddads. So my mum's dad is called Harry Wah. He's Chinese. My dad's dad's called Frankie Storrs. So I was named after them both.
Amazing.
So it felt obvious that was always going to be my artist alias. Because it means something, and it's in honor of my granddads. And then I always, like, the vision from the very beginning was always to be an artist that's performing live. So you've seen that I perform, do a live, like hybrid live set as well, because that was sort of more on my radar than before being a DJ. It was always about being in the studio and doing this live thing than actually being a DJ.
Yeah.
So then it was always, I knew I wanted a brand. I wanted to create my own lineups, create my own parties and travel it around the world. And if I could, bring my friends that my core sort of circle on that journey with me and allocate them jobs. Like, for instance, right now, one of my best friends, he's an electrician, but he's now my tour manager.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if you've seen, we built our own festival last year as like a dry run. And that was literally built by me, a handful of my closest friends that are all handy on the tools, my dad. And I think this is how we've started building this whole thing, that if it means something to you, I think that that's how ultimately you get an audience that invests in it with you, because we're all stood up there playing tunes, and to the average person, you know, it's the same. It's duff, duff, duff. Yeah. Like, who are you kidding? We're not God. Like, we're just, but then it reverts to, like, I don't know. Is it an energy thing? Are people just investing in you as an artist? I think this is why Instagram, love it or hate it. I mean, I wouldn't care tomorrow if Instagram went tomorrow. Like, I'd probably prefer it, to be honest with you. It would help people focus on the fundamentals of the actual industry.
Yeah.
But it's a tool there, whether we like it or not, it's there to be used. And you can tap into a totally different demographic if you're there showing them a more personal side of you, whether it be your day-to-day life or how you build a record, what you're doing in the studio, what the productive, like, creative process is.
Yeah.
There's all these elements, and it's what you choose to show them as to what, I guess, it yields in results and the investment you get back from them. And I think, like, the brand was a huge part of that. I needed a brand that meant something to me. So Shen is a Chinese word for ascending into a higher consciousness. So I was always going to lean on the Chinese heritage in honor of my granddad.
Yeah.
And effectively what I want people to do when they attend my shows or listen to my music, whatever it may be, like, is detach from that fucking rat race of day-to-day life and ascend into that higher consciousness. So that's why we lent on the Shen brand name. The feather that we use as the, like, apostrophe above the E is another symbol for a positive symbol for ascension. And I just think it looks cool, and we hang that above the DJ booth, and that gives it a good stamp of branding, just like the Afterlife body or that little logo that Neuron Pure uses for her show for Purified. There's loads of things. Circle Oco have got their own, but we wanted to use the feather, and the Terracotta Warriors gives you almost that you're leaning on heritage, which creates nostalgia, I guess. Yeah. And we love nostalgia, is that sicky feeling you get in the stomach when them certain chords hit you at a rave or a festival or whatever. So I think you start tying all this in, and even if you're not totally across the brand or what it means now, I've spelled it out for people that are listening now, I think you can still have that connection to it in some way or other, because the subliminal messages are there with it too. And I think you make music that has a feeling, the brand's got a feeling, everything's got a meaning, it all is sort of cohesive and works together.
No, I totally agree. And it's amazing what you've done. I think what you're talking about with Brandon as well is really interesting, because what you said, where even if somebody's not fully in on the brand, they are, they're part of it. And I guess we do that in every single everyday life with all of us, right? There's like some of us wear Nikes or Nikes, as Americans say. Like some people absolutely live, breathe, sweat, dream Nike. And but you also have to have the brand to give people the option to do that.
Of course.
And if the brand is not a cohesive brand and it's not a through line and it's not, you don't know necessarily what you're going to get all the time and it's inconsistent, that's when you kind of lose the whole the whole kind of fan base behind that. Yeah, man, it's really because I can only, I've only kind of been following you since Come Together.
Yeah.
So like but it's been a very successful journey in a short amount of time. And I obviously we all know everyone's backstories of how many years it takes to get somebody to get to a successful time. However, it's been really fun to watch like the trajectory of your career, of where it's at now compared to where it was during the pandemic.
Yeah, it's crazy. It still is. I don't know. Like I've been a nightmare in the past, Will, for sort of I'm blinkered and get my head down and like my mum's always on at me, like you never look, give yourself a chance to turn round and actually look at what you create, because I'm on to the next thing. But I think as I've got a little bit older, I've learned to definitely never lose them aspirations and that drive.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know, don't be so hard on yourself, because hearing it from you now today has given me a little bit of a realization. Like you're all the way over in America and you're seeing it. It like affirms it again. It's like, right, it is happening, because it never feels real, none of this.
Never.
You know?
Never.
It never sinks in. Like,
and I think that's that's also one of the reasons why there's levels of success in this industry, right? And definitely, no matter how you measure success, let's just say there's levels of success, and whilst you're in that success, it's very hard to see it yourself, and it's very hard to allow yourself to kind of, well, I can only speak for myself, but it's very hard to kind of sit back and go, oh yeah, let's enjoy this now and let's actually enjoy this, because 5 years ago we weren't doing this. But it's so hard to do that, and I think that's almost the negative side of being successful, is that you never feel successful.
No, but you've got to embrace it and be present, definitely. And I'm learning that all the time, because if not, I mean, I look at certain things that I've done in other walks of life and I look back at it now and I'm like, fuck, that was sick. But I remember not at the time thinking that. And I'm thinking, no, like, learn from this. Like, you need to be present. You need to embrace it. And then use that as a tool to keep going, because it's so... Another thing that I find really interesting, Will, is like...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's never gets any easier.
No.
So people might think, right, you've had a string of Beatport number ones and you've got all these headline shows and you've got this brand. He's made it now. No, like the scramble when you're there is just the same as the scramble at the bottom. It's just a different type of scramble.
Yeah.
It's no different right now what I'm doing than when I was 5 years ago, my first ADE. Made my own little memory sticks with my sticker on, handing them out to anyone that would listen, grafting it all day. It's just a different type of graft. And I think that the ones we see artist names that are there in this cycle for a few years and the ones that fall off, they're the ones that either didn't enjoy it and thought tour life is too much for me and they either, you know, set off into the sunset with all the money or they're in the background now making tunes and just doing that, or you really go at this and stay there and find ways of innovating, find ways of bringing on new talent, keep evolving your sound. And I think that's how you scramble and keep scrambling to the top, but the hustle never stops.
And I love that, but I think also add into that as well, when you're the young producer DJ handing your USBs out to people and sending people links, you have nothing to lose.
No, do
you? Absolutely nothing to lose. Whereas now you have a residency, you have a record label, you have other people depending on you. You're paying other people's bills. We're all paying other people's bills. People were dependent on us. And for me, that adds a pressure that I absolutely love to keep going and to make things.
Yeah, man, I thrive on it.
It's for me, like,
keep you on your toes, man.
Yeah, definitely. What other things have you done in your life previous to music where you didn't enjoy it?
Bodybuilding. I was Mr. Britain as junior Mr. Britain. I competed at the Mr. Universe as a junior. Came seventh in that in the world.
Wow.
But I remember being stood on stage and it didn't feel how it does standing on stage now as a DJ, I'll feel how it does sat in the studio making that tune.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel how my friends who were competing at the time described it. So there was almost like that hollow feeling at the end of like achieving, I've got these trophies and that. And I'm like, oh, this isn't for me. Like, I need to go back to music because I did produce music at school. It was hip hop.
Yeah.
And then you leave, you go to college, and we'll not get into that, but like, I got kicked out of school, kicked out of college. I was a bit of a rogue. And then I found myself in this dead end job. And you go to college, like, solid advice from especially up the north of England is get a trade behind you, something to fall back on.
Yeah.
So you do the norm, because what do we think? We think that these producers were just come out and they was born. No, you weren't.
Exactly.
But you tell someone you're going to be a plumber, they're like, oh, good one, nice one, or electrician. You say you're going to be a music producer, like, oh, fuck off. Like, who are you kidding? Yeah. So it was like up to my mum and dad at like 15, 16, I want to be a producer. Oh, that's great. Well, why don't you just do that and then do that on the side? And then life takes over, doesn't it? And you've got bills to pay and stuff like that. And then I got to a point where I was like, right, I need to do the music again, and sort of was able to find the music and get back. But for me, the best part is the journey. And I think like what we're seeing now is like some of these producers and DJs now, they might come through the ranks and they've been at it a few months, they have this massive record, and all of a sudden now they're on the circuit. What have you actually learned about the industry? Like, my first DJ gig was me taking my own mixer into this basement in Huddersfield. The only person that was dancing there was my best mate from the village I grew up in, Nick. But I wouldn't change it for the world
yeah.
will. But
yeah.
I mean, what can you learn if you now have one big record and you're all of a sudden immersed in this industry where you're playing all these shows? I think this is why we're seeing the mental health talked about a lot, and people can't cope with the pressure and that. It's like you have to work yourself to a point to be able to deal with this pressure and the hard work that comes with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've had some people on the podcast that I don't want to, I'm sure people can work it out, but I spoke to them on here, some people, and where they had like UK number ones as their like third record.
And
you're like, yeah, I respect it. Like, fair play. Like, I'm happy for you. But I haven't had a hit record in my career from as a hit record as that, of that strategy, of that high up generally, I haven't had. I've had big records, but I haven't had a hit record. Yeah. And as much as I'd love a hit record now, it'd be fucking great for my career. But like, I'm glad I haven't to a certain extent.
Definitely, I hear you on that, man.
Because
you build a solid foundation that way.
Yeah,
I think a hit record is almost false economy.
Yeah,
and you speak to anyone that's had it, like, it's weird because this is just human nature in general. Like, the ones that haven't had a hit record are yearning for one, and the ones that had it wish they never had it.
Totally.
I think that is the case of human nature in general, but it does encourage a very tricky fan base that have got, you know, potentially a short attention span that come in just for that record. And as an artist and a DJ, that's the last thing you want. And the more they request that record, there's a party of it. The more you don't want to give them it.
Yeah, it's really interesting though, because I think there's levels of hit records that certain artists have that gives them the platform to grow from it. However, if they didn't initially have a foundation, then you're kind of fucked.
Yeah, definitely, man. You need that injection. Yeah. You need that injection. Like, a good solid rise. But I think, like, a career should always be rising. And then every now and then, boom, it has a lift.
Yeah.
Rise, boom. That is the best, the healthiest way of building this sort of movement. But it is, it's crazy. But you talk to anyone, like, for instance, I was with Camels the other week at their night in Pasha, and we're on 6 years on from Cola now, I think.
Yeah,
and there's still phones up there. And I was like, to Mick, he looked around at me and he's like, I wish we could just have a sniper in the crowd that would shoot the phones because people are holding Cola up. And look at what it did for them.
This is the thing.
It was crazy. Yeah. I mean, that was a monster of a record.
Yeah.
And it elevated everything, and they've been able to build away from it and do their thing. But that's what it requires. It takes time to build away from it. But yeah, it's a good problem to have, isn't it?
Oh, mate, it's an amazing problem. Like, let's say, for instance, Jamie Jones, Hungry for the Power remix.
Yeah.
Like, for me, that was, I know Jamie's had huge records, but like, for me, that was the iconic kind of switch for him with Hot Creations as well. But like, look what that record has grown into in the grand scheme of things. Again, Cola's an amazing example, but then there's also the difference between all of those is they all had a foundation. The Camel Boys were building they were doing Camel Fat for 5-6 years before that.
Yeah.
And before that, they all had a career before as well. And I think it's like,
that makes a big difference.
Yeah. And I've seen it with you growing a foundation and being organic and growing it from the get go. Is like, if I know you had success, I know like you had successful records that kind of grew, but like they weren't hits, what we would class as hits.
No,
and I'm not saying that in a derogatory way or saying that
they're bad. Absolutely, mate. I totally agree with you.
But like, I think it's so important to have a foundation and not chase the virality of this industry, because it does.
You can smell it, Will, when they are, though. You can smell it when someone's chasing a hit, man. And absolutely naming no names anywhere, but there's been plenty of people over the years that have done it.
Yeah.
And you speak to them and they regret it and they'll admit it. you can smell it a mile off when someone's chasing a hit or when it's not authentic. You know, you hear when the sound comes in and then all of a sudden everyone else is trying to make a rendition of that sound. And it's like, I wish I could just tell them, like, don't jump on anything, because that's, you're never on the front of anything then.
Yeah.
You've got to be on, in order to catch a wave, you've got to be at the front of it. You've got to be at the forefront of it. If not, then you're chasing it all the time and it's never coming from here and it will never translate how you want it to.
Yeah.
So it's just one of them. And for me, I think a big building block of what I've done is the mixtapes. Like, so in the midst of like, Get Me High was that record that really sort of started elevating things. I came out with a solid EP after that on Viva at the time with Steve Lawler. And then it was labels like Afterlife, Prida, Bedrock, John Digweed, Last Night on Earth, Sasha, and Juna Deep, all these solid labels with solid core followings. And then it was like, right, how do I make this a thing where people are going to be about what I want them to be about? And the mixtape, in the midst of like, for instance, Come Together, which was that record that broke A-list and forget everything. We'll not go on to what it did, but it did well.
Yeah.
I dropped the mixtape straight away.
Yeah.
So it was like, it wasn't like what's coming next for Frankie Wild. Cause that's the next biggest problem. It's like, right, what's next?
Yeah.
Oh, so you either end up having to try and make a version of that record, but something similar. You're stuck in between a rock and a hard place there, mate. But I instantly just took them away from it. I mean, in fact, even on the day of the release of Come Together, I released on Afterlife. So it was like, boom, have that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is what I'm giving you. Here's a 90s influence piano breakbeat record, but here's a super melodic record on Afterlife.
Yeah.
And I think that was me setting my stall out, because you can go like that with a sound, but I've come out with like melodic breaks, tribal, deep Afro tech, progressive house, melodic techno. Like, so for me, that was me setting my stall out, because if you come and listen to a set of mine, especially an all night long set, it's getting built from 118 BPM and we go right through the genres till we can almost end up at techno at 133, 134. And that is how I did it. And with that, you just rise like that instead of peaking with a sound that is in today and gone tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think I really enjoy that it's not just purely I know you use samples, we use samples, but it's not just purely based on one big sample record, if you know what I mean. And it's
definitely not, man. Like, I think they should be used as tools, but it's crazy now what, you know, we spoke about the Beatport Top 10 earlier, and that's why I've stopped looking, because it's just every single record's a bootleg now. And I think that's sending a very misleading message to certainly the up and coming producer DJs, because there should be a level of duty. And it's not like I'm shooting anyone down for doing it, because we've all got them edits in our sets and the ones that we'd love to get cleared and put out and things like that. But your whole artist proposition should not be built on big, massive samples, because that is one way to hang yourself quickly.
100%. 100%. It's kind of, we're in a, it happened like mid 2000s. It kind of happened a little bit, and now it's now it's happening again, where it's just the level of entry of music is very low.
Some of it's lazy, man. Yeah. And I can hear it, like, it's drag and drop samples. It's a cookie dough template of an arrangement. I mean, where is the authenticity in that?
However,
I couldn't have fun doing that.
No,
not where the fun's at for me. Each to their own. And this is what I mean. This is the beautiful thing about it all, Will, is like, it's all subjective. My opinion is my opinion. It's not, it don't rule all, just like yours. It's opinions at the end of the day. It's all subjective. People, what I find interesting in the studio, other people don't. But this is why we're all different and we're all on our own path. But we're on a podcast and we're expressing opinions, and that's where I stand with it. That's not where the fun lies with me.
No, I totally agree. And I think you have to talk about your opinions. And I think we live in a world where being sensitive and kind of censor in your
people
opinions.
Are offended by the truth nowadays. Exactly. Man. It's crazy.
Yeah, and crazy. I think you have to talk about it, because I think, especially in this industry, like, as long as you're being respectful to everybody, you're not talking shit on anyone.
Definitely. No.
And it's your opinion. But like, that I had a conversation with Chris Liebing. It's actually coming out soon, but yeah. And he had a really good point about this whole sample kind of era. And he was like, the thing is, there's a demand for it.
Yep.
And there's some of the biggest nights in Ibiza are purely based on that type of music, right?
Absolutely.
And the whole like TikTok techno right now, like, there is a demand. And I think whilst there is a demand, that demand should be given, right?
Mate, well, as long as there's a demand, people are going to keep doing it. That's the thing.
It's just,
but I think
longevity.
The demand is more there now, Will, because the scene has grown. Like, what did you have in the UK years ago? What, I don't know, 10 festivals throughout the year? There's 10 a week now.
Yeah.
Because the industry has grown that much. So it's like, there's a demand for it, but with what audience? Because the audience for that underground sort of sound is still where it was.
Yeah.
But I think everything's getting pushed under one roof now. And like what we said earlier with Tiesto and this kind of sets he plays, like, to the average raver or, you know, music consumer, you would consider Frankie R, Will Clark and Tiesto the same, but we're not.
Yeah.
It's totally different altogether. And I think that's where sometimes the demand can maybe be a bit misleading, because there is a demand, yeah.
Totally.
But where?
Yeah.
And with what audience?
Well, I think...
The audience, is there a demand for an audience that were last year listening to One Direction and Harry Styles that have now...
This is it.
..gone to the first rave and, like, the tech house R&B edit sort of sound? That's sort of your entry level coming in, and then you start progressing through into more, you know, younger audience certainly like the edits, don't they? The younger crowd.
Oh, 100%. And like, don't get me wrong, a good edit is fucking amazing. You're like, oh, I wasn't. But a good edit that's done well is something different to an edit that's just done because an edit is what it is.
Yeah.
We all have edits, right? If you know what I mean? Like, we all, as DJs,
what I'm saying,
we do that.
That's what I mean. So who are we to say anything? Because I've got them up my sleeve. I'll drop one or two in a festival set to keep the crowd happy. But as long as, for me, like 70-80% of your set is more education, then it's a good place to be then. Festivals, you can sort of bend the knee a bit, can't you? You've got an hour.
You have to. You have to because
your transitions are different, you know, like you're ripping them in and out.
Yeah.
Whereas an all night long set, I might be 2 or 3 minutes on a transition,
you know,
I'm getting one record into the next. But it's horses for courses, isn't it? It's
also a business. Different. And I think for me, I don't know about you, but there's certain situations like a festival. I genuinely go into a festival thinking 10% of this crowd might know who I am. Maybe less.
Yeah.
And whereas in a club show, I might go in and go, okay, maybe 30% of the people know who I am. Like, literally listen to my music. And
probably,
I mean that, like, we all know, like, there's generally one super fan and they bring five of their mates.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do I give those five mates? Because I know the super fans in. Like, I don't need, this sounds awful, but I don't really need to worry about that person because I could fart and they will enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a horrible way, but like.
We all enjoy a fart, though.
Yeah, exactly. But like, how do I then convert the five friends to be super fans or to be like, okay, I really like that Will Clark show. Let's go to another one. Let me follow him. Let me do this, blah, blah, blah. Same, whereas at a festival, it's like, okay, 95% of this audience don't really know who I am.
Yeah.
And now I need to convert them over. And there's ways to convert people over by playing records that they know.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
An edit can be a great tool for that. An edit can serve a purpose for that.
Definitely. Because it gives that instant sort of nostalgia that we spoke about earlier, that record that was probably the favourite tune at school or whatever, reminds them of the childhood, whatever it may be. I think set times have a lot to do with that as well, because like sometimes it's like when some of the messages you get and you think, was I that good or did you just have an amazing pill and come up at that time? And you all peaked at that time, but I'll take it. Do you know what I mean? But it's like set times play a huge part in that, you know, like if the sun's setting and you've got that perfect set time, it all aligns with your feel and how it is. And that tune, trust me, if you're coming up and that sun's setting, that tune's sounding 10 times better than it did before. Do you know what I mean?
100%. It's nice to receive those messages though, right? It's nice to have.
Definitely, man. That's what we do it for, man. Yeah. Like I feel like these messages are often very timely as well. Like, cause we, no matter how confident you are in this journey, man, we all have them little stages where you like question your ability. Are you good?
Yeah.
You know, you have a week in the studio where all the ideas flow and you think you're the best producer going. Next week, you can't tie an idea together to save your arse and you think you've lost it.
Yeah.
That only happened to me last week, but I'm flying high now because I got two amazing ideas down yesterday. I'm buzzing again. Yeah. So it's like, it's just what we were saying earlier, it's a roller coaster, but them messages often come very timely for me and you read them and you're like, fuck, oh, yeah, we're on the right path, I'm doing the right thing and people are enjoying what I'm doing. So as long as they are, I keep going.
It's really interesting. I don't know if you've had this experience, but recently I played a festival and I absolutely couldn't stand the set. Like I was like,
really?
People were hating this, like super in my head about it.
Yeah.
And the amount of messages I got from it after was like, that was literally my favorite set of the festival and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, surely not. Like, it was awful.
Surely not, yeah.
Like, you're talking utter shit, but thank you. But it's just...
Yeah, we all have them moments, mate. They're the worst. They are, man. But is that what keeps you on the right path? I'm pretty certain it is. Because there's nothing worse than someone up there getting ahead of themselves. Being sort of indulged in their own ego and that. Because that's how you lose it, man, fast.
Yeah, you know I've never thought about it that way. Never.
The minute you start losing that sort of, I don't know, like you can't go too much into your own head because then it will affect you. But being connected to your fan base is very important.
Yeah.
Because it keeps you there. And I think another important thing for me is like, if I'm not rushing off to another show or catch another flight, like I always make a good point of getting out in the crowd and being at the other side of the fence, because it keeps you again on the ball with what works and how the crowd are reacting, because it's a totally different feel to playing out. Gives you a good idea. You know, when we're making these tunes and it's being road tested tonight, that's great. But you do need to jump the other side of the fence to feel it as a raver as well every now and then. It gets you, puts you in the ballpark with what you need to do as your job. It's like homework, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's also really nice for fans to experience that moment with you on the dance floor.
Yeah.
And like whether you're on the dance floor for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and fans can like fist bump you or take a photo with you. It's just, it adds to the story of their night for them. And I think that I grew up very much so, well, we all did, I guess. We're similar ages, I believe. But like, mobile phones were not a thing when we first started raving. And so like, people wouldn't take cameras to clubs. So nobody would really like have a way to kind of take a picture with an artist or like, so it was very us and them artists back then. And now
it shouldn't be that.
It shouldn't be like that at all. And now it's like very community driven, and it should be community driven. And that's for me why I do it, is to kind of have a community of people around you that like,
well, who the fuck are we without them?
Exactly.
If you're looking for sort of something to just put it all into perspective, like we're still up there playing to no one without them. So it needs to be really pretty much all about them, to be honest with you.
I agree.
I make a big point of that. Like I often on tour or put a location out before my set and meet them.
Do
a meet and greet, have a drink with them. Because the best thing about that is, Will, is like the chances and probability of you having a lot in common with them is very, very high.
Because, of course,
they're into the same thing as you are. So yeah. you're meeting people that you want to be in touch with, like, for the rest of your life. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's brought you together, and it's just a better way of solidifying the whole thing, really, because once they've had that connection with you, then they're with you for life, man. It's a special feeling, that, knowing that you're soundtracking, I guess, some of the best moments of their life. Like, we do this week in, week out, but for that show that we do at the end of this week, that's their special night for that month or whatever.
Yeah.
After grafting their arse off all month.
Yeah.
So the fact that they've spent their money to spend it with us, it's our job to make it the best night of their fucking life.
It's mad, isn't it?
What is there a better job in the world? I mean,
No,
I'm convinced there isn't, man.
No, there really isn't. There really isn't at all. I want to talk about your farm.
Go on. That's where I'm going to retire.
Literally.
I was literally on it last week with my dad because, I mean, you know how crazy the tour life gets.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I mean, for me, it's the perfect sort of balance to just go there. You know, I remember last year when I was discing the fields and I'm in the bottom of a hill discing this field and no signal on my phone, the radio. It's fucking bliss, man.
Yeah, man.
It's a good balance, man.
Yeah,
like,
I grew up.
Nature is the perfect way of balancing this whole shit out. Do you know what I mean?
It's the best. I grew up. My parents live on an old farm. They're not farmers, but they live on an old farm, and I've always grew up with farmers around and everything like that. And it's definitely a goal of mine to have, like, a small holding over, like, when I not retire, but, like, slow down.
Yeah, man. Why not? There's plenty of them out here. Calvin Harris has got a big farm out here in Ibiza.
Yeah,
but it's you find a lot of peace in just being on that tractor, man.
Like, yeah. Did you grow up with it?
Yeah. Fucking heck, I was like, so we used to farm pigs.
Okay.
Pigs as well. We don't have any livestock now. We're just purely arable. But
yeah,
mate, I would be up at 6 in the morning getting the pigs out for my dad to go to market.
Yeah.
School smelling a pig shit. It was mad. It's just funny. And you've probably seen my dad on the socials, man. He's a character, man. And it's wicked because how supportive he's been of this journey of mine. Like, with 4-5 generation family farmers. Yeah. So there is an immediate pressure to sort of carry on the legacy of the farm. And I mean, luckily I've got an older brother, so I can dip in and dip out. But it's nice to do what I can when I can, definitely, because it balances it all out. If I'm back home and I've had a few days rest and I've had a few days in the studio, then it's like, now what? Boom. Because I love a bit of just, it takes you back to where it all began, and you need that. That's why I like being where I'm from. Like, the village that I'm from, Will, I think there's about fucking 800 people that live in it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So there's no scene. I started my own little scene by bringing people to my studio.
Yeah.
10 people, 20 people, 30 people. Do you know, like, the nearest city to me is like 45 minutes to an hour away. So it's been a different story to a lot of other people. Most people want to say they're from London or they're from Berlin, and now I'm from a little village up north and I'm a farmer.
It's very, very similar to me, because I always say I'm from Bristol because it's easy.
Right.
But, like, I'm not from Bristol at all. Like,
where are you from?
I'm from a tiny place called Clua, which is near Cheddar.
I still don't know where that
is. Somerset. It's like middle of
Somerset.
Yeah, middle of fucking nowhere. So
it's got the accent.
No, thank fuck. Jesus Christ.
Thank fuck,
so it's similar to me, and it's really interesting kind of talking to you as well, because I feel like we had similar upbringings where it was you're the person throwing the party for your friends. Because there's nowhere else for them to go. And it's like, I remember the end of school every summer, like the first week of summer, like, I'd always throw a party for my mates, and we'd put a marquee in the field, and like, we used to, like, in the old cow sheds, like, throw a rave in there. And it's like, I think that's it's interesting. It's really nice watching it on your socials because I can relate to it so much. And it's
definitely just like, I love that.
Really,
love that.
It's really, really dope. And also, like, the whole farm thing is very humbling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Living in the countryside is very humbling generally because it's like no one gives a fuck.
No one, mate, and this is what I fucking love. And this is like, so this is my dad. Like, I'm like, on a Monday morning, he's like, what did you do at weekend? I'm like, just played at Creamfields to 20,000 people. He's like, sound, clean that pig shit up.
Yeah.
Like, brilliant. You know what I mean? All right. Sound. I remember when I was telling him all these things, like, because for ages, man, like, certain things, I'm like, oh, so, you know, so-and-so, you've heard of Carl Cox? Well, a DJ that plays with him played my tune, and he's like, all right, you know when you're clutching at straws with there's nothing really happening in your career, and he's like asking what's happening. And I just remember him saying, when are you going to start earning some fucking money from this? And I was like, soon, do you know what I mean? But it's so fucking funny, and it's weird because he's got so into it now, and he's like, he's genuinely into the music now. Yeah. Like he's got into a bit of it. I mean, he's not into all of it, but there's certain records he likes. And I think this Sunday he'll be coming to the first show.
Oh, amazing.
Ever. I'm headlining Finsbury Park in London.
Yeah.
8,000 people.
Damn.
My mum's definitely coming. But would you believe it, man? Like we're in the middle of harvest at the moment. It's been rained off. We've had the worst summer yet.
Yeah.
But it's forecast fucking sun all weekend. So I reckon he's going to stack it off.
Do you reckon? And,
I reckon he is, mate. I mean, let's put a bet on now. But my best bet is now he's not coming. Normally, what we do is my tour manager will FaceTime him.
Yeah.
And I've got a fucking wicked photo when I was playing Hideout in Croatia. And I FaceTimed him and he's on the fucking combine. I mean, we screenshotted it. Fucking class.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have to make some content out of that because that would be fucking
amazing. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's the thing I love about the countryside in the UK anyway. Is just no one, like, I always get that question. Will, are you still doing that DJ thing?
Do that DJing thing, yeah. Out of interest, my daughter is having a christening. Would you mind coming and playing a few tunes? You're like, yeah, of course. You know, we come play my fucking niece's bar mitzvah. Yeah, go on then.
It's fucking not? Amazing. Which is quite funny because my cousin is like the local disco DJ as well.
Right,
like, he's okay. Like really successful with, like, he's like does weddings and all of that. And so it's quite funny that we're both DJs in the local area and no one really understands what you
No one gives yeah, but doing. Fucking so the shuns, you
best.
Know.
It's the best.
It's good what we do, but we're only mixing one record into the others and yeah. It's funny, yeah. Well, all right, that's great. Did you see that on the news the other day? Yeah.
That, I love it.
That went straight over the head, yeah.
I love it so much. Are you living in Ibiza? During the summer?
Yeah, I've moved here now, Will. So I'm here till the closing party is the 1st of October. The club have got me this place till the end, I think November, to be fair.
Nice.
So, but I'm out of here. I've got a week off after the opening and then I'm out to South America, playing tomorrow in Brazil, nice. Which is exciting.
Yeah.
And then I fly back to do, this is a bit of a spoiler alert, but Shen London, and then I've got Shen ADE.
Nice.
And then I'm in North America then for a 5-week tour. So
amazing.
I'm looking forward to that. Back to back tour with Coral over. And I think we finish at Space Miami, which is,
it's always fun.
You know. Yeah, it is, yeah. And I've got a few days, I think I've got a week to sort of stay in Miami. I love Miami, man.
Do you?
And I fucking hated it the first time I went.
Yeah.
First time I went was Miami Music Week and I stayed in South Beach and it was fucking like, it was crazy. It was lawless. And like, I don't know, I'd come in off a long flight and I was a bit tired and that. And I thought, fucking hell, this is wild. You know, a load of frat boys going crazy. But I fell in love with the place now and I love it. There's a bar there called Dante's. It's like a vinyl only bar. And I've just heard some of the best music I've ever heard in my life there. And
yeah.
I always make sure I go. Have you been?
No, I've not it's been. I've not been. I'm kind of with you on your first take of Miami. I love going for like a day, 2 days max.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, this is too much. Like I'm out.
Yeah.
But I love it. Space is the best, man. Space is the best.
Yeah. Good, isn't it? Wild crowd in there.
Yeah, it's just like, It's the most European feeling, European South American feeling club in America.
Yeah.
So it's like you don't really get that anywhere else in America when you. Like,
no, I think there in New York for me translates.
Yeah.
To what, to Europe the most,
which makes sense. I agree with that. It makes sense, yeah. Totally, because New York is very European generally.
Definitely, man. They're ahead. They're on the ball with what's happening.
Yeah.
Across the pond for sure. And the promoters there, MJ and Joey, man. I know you're good pals, but the fucking they're good guys, good to work with. And yeah, the vision is excellent, man. I've really enjoyed the relationship I've built with them because we did the first ever Share in America with them in New York at the Knockdown Center.
Yeah.
And I think you did one not long after the Knockdown Center. What a venue that is, man.
Oh dude, it's amazing.
And the crowd, man, like
It's amazing.
I just love it. I love it.
I really like, and I'm pretty sure you're similar, but I really like finding new venues or using venues in a different way to what other people use them, so that when people come into them, it's a different experience.
Mate, that totally, because what we did for my show, that yours, and I'm thinking, where? I was trying to work out how that was the same venue. Yeah. It looked totally different.
That venue is mental. There's like four different places to do it. And I think it's interesting what Joey and MJ are doing. Like, I've had multiple conversations with MJ and about it. And it's a lot of these venues are kind of gatekept by the super cool cats in the industry.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to kind of get the more commercial crowd over there because they want to book super, super, super cool acts. And I don't fall under a super, super cool act. I don't know where you feel you fall under, but like, I think it's just really nice to be able to give people that wouldn't necessarily ever go to these venues an opportunity to experience the venues and grow from that. That's how you build a scene, really.
Definitely. And that's what they've done there.
Yeah.
Like, you look at a lot of their shows, like, they're for me, like, the epitome of what a promoter should be, because they've got a solid audience that trusts in what they do. And they are not just responsible for booking the ticket sellers. They are booking emerging talent and selling out shows.
Yeah.
Like, they were responsible for my first sellout show in America. And since then, things just elevated fast. And it was down to them and how they promoted me, because they've got a core audience that trusts what they're saying. They're like, well, this guy's good. Come check it out. Yeah. And that's hard to do now, because a lot of these shows are just sold on hype and big ticket sellers. And this is why you see a lot of the same names just emerging and doing the rounds. And it's hard for people to break through, and they're making sure that people are breaking through and getting that platform to showcase what they can do. So fucking hats off to them, because a lot of promoters could learn a lot from them, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And especially nowadays, as coming out of the pandemic, I feel it even more so, where it's like, it's strict business as a promoter.
Yeah.
And I'm not generalizing, because it's not all of them. There's some promoters that do amazing jobs, but there's also a lot of promoters that don't even fucking go to the show, don't even care about the show. They don't even
but you've got, listen, I think that there, because you're totally right, Will, but for me, and I don't know, like, I judge things now, like, you know, when you're busy and you're touring a lot, like last year, for instance, like I say no more than I say yes to shows, right? Yeah. And I base a lot of what I do now on, right, first and foremost, the sound system, for me, is a big thing. Like, I won't go back anywhere for no money if the sound system isn't right. Like, is the crowd right? And what are the promoters like, and the hospitality? And you put all them things into a box, and it's like, I want to play for a promoter that's invested in me. And a good example of this is, so when I did that sold out show in New York, all of a sudden I had another promoter bidding to take me back to New York, and the offer came in and it was good, and I was like, wicked. And I said straight away to my manager, is it MJ and Joey? And he was like, no, it's someone else. And I was like, well, I'm not doing it. Tell MJ and Joey there's this offer. Is there a date open for me that they want me to come back on? I want to go back with them. They built this.
Totally.
They're going to have the next show. Yeah. And I think as an artist, you should make sure that there's a duty of care there, because you start selling out for money, you're selling your fucking soul. And it's a short journey. It doesn't last.
No, 100%.
And MJ and Joey are so invested in what I do. And that's how you're able to build something that is sustainable and that lasts. So I think, again, there, that's... if I can offer a bit of advice to anyone, like to any of these DJs that are just sort of learning the ropes now, make sure that you're good with the people that are good to you, because it comes back round.
It's a small industry.
Definitely, mate.
Very small. We've done an hour and 10 minutes. Let's wrap this up a little bit, but I just want to kind of touch base on your Ibiza the residency a little bit more and kind of like talk about how people can come and see you, where it is, all of a bit more detail. So if people are coming to Ibiza, how can they see it?
Right. So it's every Sunday. It's at Club Chinois. So it's based in the port of Ibiza, facing Old Town, looking at Dolville, a beautiful setting. And it's just around the corner from Pasha. So, you know, it's a totally different clubbing experience from anything on the island. You've got this like intimate feel, but that super club experience, which for me right now, what I'm looking for as a raver is probably the ultimate experience for me. I think sometimes if a club gets a little bit too big and super club, you can lose that vibe that you're after. This night, I just encourage people to just come check out themselves. It's like hands in the air till fucking 6-7 in the morning. There's not many mobile phones kicking about. The lineup I've curated is very on brand in terms of what we're trying to put out there with Shen. No one's been booked because every booking is a passion booking. No one has been booked because they sell tickets, you know, anything like that. I've booked some of my favorite artists. It's growing week on week. Last week we had a phenomenal week. It was me and Hot Sauce 82 back to back for 4 hours.
Amazing.
I think we must have had a good 1,000, maybe 1,500 people stood outside the club trying to get in. It was amazing. It was a mad feeling, Will. It's on every Sunday now till the 1st of October. Next week coming up, we've just had the legend John Digweed back. Him and Sasha opened it back to back. Next week, we've got Rodriguez Jr. and Georgian Julie both playing live. So, yeah, that's where we're at. And every Sunday, 12 till 6, 7 in the morning, depending on what's happened. This week, it was like till 7:30. Are you over at all?
I'm actually there coming up this Monday.
You'll be doing an L row, are you?
I'm doing high with Patrick and then doing L row as well.
That's a Monday then. So Monday. What day do you get in?
Monday. I'm literally in and out every time. I know. The September in L row, I've my flights have just got booked, but I might change them. I might stay an extra couple of days, so if I am, I'll
do, man. And you're on the Saturday for El Rose, so you can maybe catch the show on the Sunday.
But yeah, man.
Yeah, man. Just like leaning back on the Ibiza residency, it's been built with a great team. Danny Whittle, who you know, created and ran Pasha for 14 years. Legend. He's behind it. It feels good, man. And it's like for me, it's affirmed definitely what I want to do. For my summer, I do want it to just be based around what I'm building in Ibiza. I think it's the almost party capital of the world. You get an energy here like no other. And it sounds a bit cliche, but you know what I'm saying. You've been to Ibiza. It's fucking magnetic. It's special. And I do feel like Ibiza residency, for me, as one of my personal sort of aspirations as a DJ and producer, was... It's like the Champions League for me to have your own event here, and I'm blessed that it's fell how it has and it's growing how it is, because every week I'm just surprised that the club's full and everyone's there having a good time. And every week is like you're pulling your hair out, and then you get there and you're like, what was I worrying for? You know, but we'll never get over that. You'll never not worry.
Never.
Like, it's like when you've organised one of your parties for your barn and are you coming?
Yeah,
promise you'll come. Yeah. 7 o'clock prompt. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm so happy for you. Like, genuinely.
Thank you,
I've watched from an outside and kind of far back. And I'm really genuinely happy for you. Like, you keep,
appreciate it, man. And I appreciate being on here, man. I can't believe we've been on here over an hour, man. It's been good to chat.
No, it's been great, man.
Let's get you in a beefer and we'll do this. This can be kitchen 5 a.m.
Literally. Mate, have a great rest of the summer. Keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing, man. And it will
Thank you, bro.
Big love. Keep
safe. Thank you, man. And hopefully we'll link soon, man.
Yeah, definitely. Big love. Keep safe. See you soon. Bye. And that's a wrap. Big love to Frankie for coming on. I love that episode. Please share it. If you want to get involved in the Discord community, hit the description in the link. The link in the description. And yeah, keep safe. Till next time.
Everybody in your crew identifies as either Big Mac Burger, McNuggets, or McCrispy Sandwich. But you're the Filet-O-Fish Sandwich all day. That crispy fish, that savory tartar sauce, that melty cheese, that pillowy bun. Yeah, you get it. Every time.
And if you love the Filet-O-Fish, right now you can catch two of the classics you love for just $6. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Single item at regular price.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.